This week on Dueling Review, we are taking a look at Batgirls number one from DC Comics. Thank you to everyone who's joining us in the live chat this week. Don't forget, if you are a Patreon member, if you're a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers, and you link your Patreon account to our Discord server, then you can come in and access the Dueling Review Stages Room, where you can listen to us record this show live at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Also, a little bit of pre-show chatter and post-show chatter that you get that we do not record and you're not going to hear anywhere else. So another reason to make your Patreon dollars work for you. Find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. The other thing that patrons get to do at patreon.com/majorspoilers is vote for the comic that we're reviewing this week. And this week, everyone decided Batgirls number one was the one that they that the majority wanted. And majority rules here. So we're looking at Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad telling the story with art by Jorge Corona. And this is a future state story. And I'll be honest, I don't really know everything that's going on in future state, except it's the future and villains have been outlawed. Or sorry, vigilantes have been outlawed. And there's some crazy magistrate and his goons running around trying to kill all the superheroes, or all the vigilantes, I should say.
Wait, this is a future state?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought rolled out of fear state.
No, I think it's future state.
Because they talk about Batman fear state in
the magistrate's goons show up in the very last page.
Right, but when Oracle is talking about it, they're talking about references that happened in fear state, which I thought was actual current.
Yeah, I have no idea. Anything is possible. Why then do the magistrate? Why do they mention the magistrate at the end? No idea. So I think in this story, it's time for Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown and Oracle to go find a new place to live, a new section of Gotham. And so they go and they move into a new apartment complex, which feels very much like a Nightwing series from, 20 years ago. And some of their neighbors are looking shifty. They have to deal with some thugs that are kind of trying to control the town, and they're trying to stay out of the eye of somebody called the Seer, who I don't know who the Seer is. Must be a new villain that everybody knows of. But so she's kind of narrating parts of this story. Mm-hmm. And then there's something going on with some hypnosis guys. And that's kind of your story.
Yeah, the hypnosis guys were kind of confusing to me, but the Seer, to my knowledge, is from Fear State, which is why I thought this was a Fear State thing. Because I'm not sure of the difference between Fear State and Future State, because Jace Fox has become Batman in the actual sort of continuity, I guess. I don't know. But the Seer that I know is the one who dresses like Kaliman. And runs around Gotham City and does weird stuff. So it may be a different character.
No, I mean, they do reference Fear State. They're saying, hey, look at the events of Fear State, because they blew up the clock tower or whatever in that. Right. But like I said, when you get to the end of the issue and they're talking about the magistrate, that's definitely future state stuff. So
this is the magistrate from the past, which is actually now.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know. DC continuity is just like a complete mess to me now. And it honestly doesn't matter, because none of that is really important to the understanding of this book. It's just like, this is why we're all living together in a little apartment and, doing the whole thing like the Harley Quinn movie.
I don't know if it's a little apartment. They have the whole top floor of a building, which is...
Well, they're playing it off like it's just some terrible little place. And, we don't even have our super killer Wi-Fi with the amazing VPN that everybody... These are rich people. Rich people.
I think the reason why they don't have that is because they're trying to hide from the Seer. And so because of whatever happened in Fear State, they have to go out. And part of their mission is to go out and keep a low profile and also help Oracle set up her super secret Wi-Fi to keep everybody safe. But again, it doesn't go as well as you might think, because not only do they have to deal with the street level thugs and the magistrate's goons, there's somebody who's there's a serial killer on the loose in this part of the city, and Cassandra and Stephanie think that they know who it might be. And there's also a guy who's a street artist who's tagging everything. And then there's the hypnotist storyline. So they're dumping a lot of stuff into this first issue to kind of get you into the, yeah, this is a totally different part of Gotham. This is not the stuff that Batman normally deals with. This is a lot of street level stuff. You know, get in here and roll with it as quickly as you can, even though honestly, I think it's pretty clear where things are lining up at some point. It will not surprise me if the Batgirls and the street gang have to team up to take down the hypnotized people that that are in here. And also my guess is that again, this is based on art. So I guess one of the issues I have with, and this isn't really an issue, this is just something that happens, right? So if you are, for example, Jim Lee, everything you draw is always going to look like Jim Lee. Even if there is, even if one of your characters in the comic book is an artist and they're painting something or they're doing something, it's still going to be Jim Lee doing that art. And so it's going to look like Jim Lee's art. So when we get to the person doing the street art that everyone is talking about, the tutor, you know, it's really cool art. But when I look at it, all I can see is the artist of this issue doing those murals, right? So it's the style of the art, the content creator is reflected in the street art, which, you know, I understand
hard to get around,
it is a very hard thing to get around, but it is something that could also be a detriment, right? Because we see the street art artist, the tutor, and then at the same time, Stephanie comes in and says, oh man, there's an art gallery called Spellbound. And we see this kind of hypnotism pattern and we see this art style that's depicted in the flyer. And then when we see the street art itself, it seems like those two are directly linked to one another, which they may be, but if it's supposed to be, I don't know, graphic art and design, it can be very difficult when you have a style that people expect to see.
Do you know whether or not they have introduced the Batman villain Spellbinder in the new 52 or the post?
I have no idea.
Whatever it is.
I have no idea.
Because you just said Spellbound, and I didn't really think about that until right now. There is an established Bat villain with hypnotizing powers called the Spellbinder.
Yeah. So, yeah. And if you look at if you go back and look at the poster for Spellbound, a groundbreaking new art show at the Hill's own New Life Gallery, it very much looks like, oh, this is somebody hypnotizing you and whatnot. So it very well could be bringing in one of those older bad villains that we haven't seen before or haven't seen recently and make them the big deal in this thing. And so we may actually see that maybe the creepy old guy that they're thinking is the serial killer is also Tudor and the art gallery. Who knows? We don't know.
Banksy.
Yeah, no, I don't think Banksy is in this one.
No, they're Banksy. It's Banksy.
So yeah. So that's kind of my problem with graphic, you know, trying to imitate another art or trying to do a different style of art using your art style inside of a comic book. That's the only thing. I mean, maybe the artist could do a Banksy, but I have a feeling it would still look like this artist trying to imitate Banksy.
See, and I don't know whether you like this art or not, but I read through this thinking, God, Steven's going to love this because it looks so much like a grittier Ramos. And
no,
I'm just like,
I wouldn't say that it looks like Humberto Ramos just because it's really not in that style, but I would say that is very, who is the artist on this real quick? Let me look here. Is it, it's not Babs Tarr, it's Jorge Corona. It feels, and I'm not familiar with, his art style. It feels like when we had the Batgirl of, that other Batgirl series where she was in the other part of Gotham. With Babs Tarr. This feels like a rougher version of some of her art. And it also feels like an art style that is specifically designed to draw in a YA audience. Just from the way that they depict everything and the color palette that's used. If you were to say, who is this for? I would say, oh, this is definitely them trying to attract YA girls. In fact, even Barbara Gordon is drawn significantly younger than the way that she is typically portrayed with these other two characters. In fact, if I were to say, you know, just looking at the three of them together on a panel, what are their age ranges? I would say they're all within 5 years of one another.
I would just go like 15 to 25 ish, something like that.
Yeah. Barbara just does not look that much older. She's maybe 5 years older than the youngest one, who I would say is maybe Cassandra, but that in itself is hard to tell. So this feels like a very teen oriented or YA oriented book, which again, there's nothing wrong with that. I really appreciate a lot of YA books that I've read. I get a kick out of those and I like what they're doing. I like that comics are trying to find that audience that they have lost in the last 20 years. So I find that very good and refreshing. And if this is that book that you know, is that introduction to comics for young female readers, then great. But that's just kind of what the art reminds me of. The other thing about the art that, I don't know, the colorist who I don't have who the colorist is in front of me. And I know we talked a lot about coloring last time. In fact, let me just pause this portion of the review or of the discussion, because the colorist of the comic that we reviewed last week actually wrote to us and said, thanks for the kind words. I wanted to thank you for the kind words about my coloring in Lady Mechanica Monster Number One. I joked with my husband about attaching that rock star comment to his ringtone. Colors are often overlooked, so I really appreciate the highlight in your review. You're right about most colorists not having the luxury of time. Joe Benitez and Marcia Chen are really thoughtful about their scheduling. It really helps us put our best foot forward. Then she does go on to say that she does have her own OGN out that is called Grump that you can go and check out. So, so that's Beth Sotelo, I believe is how you say her last name. But it was nice that she listened to this. So back to this then, since we're talking about coloring, there is a base color palette that this colorist is using that uses a lot of green, purple, red, and teal, I guess, for lack of a better word, and some yellowish color. Those are your five colors that you're going to find in here. And I don't dislike the color combination. But it's very different than what you might normally think of in comic books when you have so much of that teal and green and purple mixed together. It might make you think that, wait, is this a Joker comic book?
And I think that's why you're seeing, because I don't see any resemblance to Babs Tarr's line work, but I feel like the color palette and just sort of the general vibe of things, you know, the general layout and the colors chosen really does feel, I agree with you, first of all, YA, and second of all, very similar to that Batgirl of Burnside book from a few years ago.
Yeah.
But I feel like, again, not everybody sees colors like I do. And I know that, especially when it comes to those poison greens that are all over here. But I feel like there are a lot of sequences here where backgrounds kind of go by the wayside in favor of a cool, you know, color splotch or something that kind of emphasizes or maybe emulates a sky. Mm-hmm. And there's a page where we see, hey, there's Cass and Babs and they're on an orange background. And oh, the next panel is different. So now the background has gone green. I don't know. But, you know, I keep running into bits in this story where I have to stop and look and think, okay, it's stylization. It's not like all of a sudden the world outside the window has turned a crazy orange. But
well, unless you're trying to do like maybe something like from a Batman 66, where every panel where they're punching out the bad guys is a different color to kind of emphasize that whoomp and the brack and the kerfrump that they're hitting the guys. And so you have that kind of flashy color change.
Kerfrump.
That's what it says.
Kerfrump is kerfrump is a curse word in Finnish.
Well, but that's what it says here on the page. So take it up with DC.
DC.
But again, going back to the coloring aspect, that page that you're referencing where they're in the fight and they're against the yellow background and all the panels that are inset are a different color. Mm-hmm. That's the same color palette that Tudor is using in his street art, which
Mm-hmm.
Again, is like, okay, you're trying to say something with the color. What are you trying to say with it? And I feel like there may be a contradiction going on.
I wonder if it might not be intentional that they're using the greens and purples, which, you know, in comic book parlance do kind of represent, traditionally speaking, the villain side of things, to try and, you know, point out that these guys are kind of under the radar and they are kind of acting in a vigilante or an outlaw way. I don't know. It's an interesting thought process, but I will also say I do love the fact that you can tell that the car that they steal from the criminals is a 59 Plymouth Fury like Christine. Yeah. A very well drawn, although tricked out to be kind of an evil death race 59 mm-hmm. Plymouth Fury. Mm-hmm. That's kind of neat. And I like, you know, I feel like I like Corona's buildings and mm-hmm. his technology and his vehicles a lot more than I like his body proportions.
Oh, his characters.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, it's one of those things where stylization is fine. I mean, even guys like, you know, John Byrne and George Perez they have little bits of things where they do take some liberties with what
realistic
bodies look like. But I'm just not a fan of everyone being really tall and lithe and rubbery. But also, there are a couple of sequences here, like that page you mentioned, where both Batgirls are kicking at the camera, mm-hmm. metaphorically speaking, because mm-hmm. there's no camera, but kicking at the reader. And you get the super elongated, foreshortened legs, and mm-hmm. it looks really neat. And I'm like, I don't hate it. I don't love it, but it's fascinating to look at. It's really great stuff. It's just
it
not
is
my
really
bag.
Stylized, and I think that if you were to go and look at the artist and this goes across all, comic book artists currently mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. a lot of artists are coming from outside the United States right now.
Oh, sure.
You know, so they may be coming from the Philippines, they may be coming from Brazil, they may be coming from, you know, Central America, you know, wherever that they're coming from around the world. It may be Europe, but it's fascinating to see how they bring their cultural aesthetic into comic pages. And I wonder if that's not some of the stuff that's happening here in this as well.
It's definitely possible. And it, you know, when I say that I see likenesses to Humberto Ramos, and I think more specifically, and now I can't remember the name of the guy, but the gentleman from whom Ramos was taking some of his design cues when he took over Impulse, who had been on Flash before him, that's complimentary. This is stuff that I don't necessarily... Again, I don't feel like I'm the audience, but I want to make it clear that I'm not saying it's bad. It's really, really neat stuff. And, you know, the moment where Cass comes out in her unicorn robe and you're like, hey, wait a minute. She just kicked the butt of several people off screen. But that's so cute. And that's one of those moments where you're just like, right, these are, you know, teenage women. And that's the point of the story is, you know, these are two young vigilantes doing their thing. I'm honestly surprised, given the way my kid acts, that they don't love the little Vespas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When she's like, here's your Batgirl Vespas. And they're like, yeah.
Yeah. No. Mo, I love Vespas. I saw one today that was like a vintage one yesterday. That was a vintage one, like a 65 Vespa that was just like, wow. It was one of the, what is it, Cabriolet Vespas. Just in really great condition. I was like, oh yeah, I want to get one of those.
Did it have a little fish boy on it?
No.
There was a little fish boy on the last one that I saw.
No, but yeah, no, I dig it. And again, that I think maybe seeing the Vespa, because isn't that what the Batgirl of Burnside's had? Wasn't she driving around on a Vespa?
Oh gosh, maybe. I didn't even think about that.
I think at least one page or panel where she's riding around on a Vespa or a motorcycle. But then again, Vespa's motorcycles have pretty much always been a Batgirl vehicle, whether you're going from a TV series or comic books or whatever. So I can see that. And it's fine with me. And I think that may also be, again, your kid is maybe a little bit older than this target audience, or maybe, you know,
really,
maybe, because I think that maybe, or maybe what it's saying is, your kid is not into Vespas, or your kid is into Vespas.
My kid loves a Vespa.
Okay. So maybe that's what it is that the readers who identify with Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown are youngers, and maybe they don't like Vespas. I don't know what the, what the age, you know, what the younger kids are thinking about with Vespas these days, but I could see somebody in this age range going, nah, I'll pass on these hoagie little motorcycle things. So
now we need to find some actual hello fellow kids and ask them, how do you feel about Vespas?
So we spent a lot of time talking about the art of this book. What did you think of the story in this book? I kind of said that I think that there's a lot of things going on, and it seems like things are going to converge in weird ways, even though it seems like there's five different plot points going on at the same time. It feels like maybe there's only two.
Yeah. Is this meant to be a limited?
I have no idea.
Do we know if this is, I feel like if this is a six issue, like mini or limited, I agree with you that everything is going to tie into itself and it's all going to be one big bow. Otherwise, traditionally, my thought on this, if it was 1987 and I was reading, my expectation would be that they have plotted out the first two or, you know, maybe even 3 years of this book. And they're making sure in this first issue that we're getting the bits and pieces of all of these things are going to come up. They're all going to be very important. Speaking of hello, fellow kids, I'm going to be 51 tomorrow. Happy birthday to me. But I felt a little bit of the hello, fellow kids from this writing, not necessarily to the point where it was off-putting, but I feel like if someone much younger than us were reading this and, you know, they saw the eye rolling and the unicorn thing and the girls being like, yeah, we're awesome, and I'm going to sleep on the top bunk, there were points here where I felt like maybe it went a little further than I thought might be authentic in telling us how, you know, wild and wacky these, you know, Generation Z teenage women are. But that's also going to be something that I think is going to be in the eye of the beholder. So it's something to take into account.
I didn't I didn't feel like the writing was talking down to the kids or trying down, to. No, but even just trying to, hey, let's be pals kind of thing. I didn't
you know,
feel
like when Bob Haney in the 60s would write stories and it would be like, hey, you groovy wonder chick.
Yeah, no. But I'd be like, I know exactly
really
what you're
talk
saying.
Like that, you know,
I understand what you're saying. I did not get that in this. I felt like it was very natural and exuberant for these characters to act and talk the way they did. The one thing that I have the biggest problem with, and again, this is because I'm an old school Cassandra Cain fan.
You are old.
I don't like that she talks so much. And I know
she had her brain rewired in like 2003, though, Cassandra has been talking.
Yeah, I know.
It's not true to that core concept. And I get it. You know, sometimes you do have something that you wish would have stuck with a character.
I'm trying to think if even in the recent Young Justice series, I don't think she talks in that animated series either. In her big story arc, in the animated Young Justice series, I don't think she talks one either.
I know that the last few times I've seen her in comics, she has.
The Book of Jimbo Fett says Cassandra is mute in Young Justice. That's what I thought.
Okay.
Yeah. So from that Young Justice series on HBO Max to this, I'm like, wow, she sure talks a lot. But yeah, I'm aware that they reworked her brain and that she went through a bunch of speech therapy to speak. And I know that
David Kane.
David Kane was very upset that they taught her to speak, because it's like now she's lost all of her powers and abilities. She doesn't have that ability to read body language when she's too busy listening and talking. So
Cluemaster is Stephanie's dad is who you're thinking.
So that was probably the only thing about the writing that I was kind of put off by, but you know, again, that's 20 years ago kind of stuff. But from the story, I thought it was fine. I think from a first issue, you're dumping a lot in, and I feel like there's a lot of energy in the story itself with these two younger heroes who are trying to do what their mentor is telling them to do, but they just so much want to go out and fight crime and do the right thing that they can't help themselves. And by doing that, they end up getting themselves in trouble. So in a little bit of a sense, it's kind of like impulse, right? Where this person doesn't have a governor to regulate what they're doing or saying. And so I think that from that standpoint, I kind of like this story. I don't know if I'm going to continue to read it though.
That's kind of where I am too. There are things that you can get into and you can say, I definitely, you know, for me, I feel like the quality of this book is undeniable. This is really kind of fun. And while I don't necessarily agree with some of the visual decisions, I understand why they're being made, but I don't necessarily feel the need to read the whole thing necessarily, because it feels like it is tied into a lot of things that I don't know and don't necessarily care to know about. I mean, when we look at the conversation that we had about, is this future state? Is this now? Who is the seer? All of this stuff tying into Scarecrow and blowing up all of the Arkham Asylum and all of the things that pop up. I feel like this is a book that's going to read really, really nice to you if you're kind of aware of the goings on in Gotham. You don't necessarily have to be, I read everything Batman guy, although it will work for you too if you are that guy and or girl. But I feel like it's going to work better for you. And I'm like, for all of the things that I enjoy here, I don't necessarily want to do the legwork to try and unravel all of the bits and pieces of it. It's kind of the same reason I fell away from Justice League recently, is I don't know when or where this is happening, and parts of it are referencing things that these definitely happened, but then they're also like, yes, the multiverse says all of the stories happened, but the stories are contradictory, so all of the stories can't have happened. Go away, Black Adam. And, you know, but I will say this. If you say to me, should I read it? I think the answer is going to be yes. If you're interested in more kind of teenage vigilante action, maybe of a New Warriors or an Impulse style bent, not quite as Young Justice, the comic, which I feel was more comedic. But this is definitely something that it reminded me of the Batgirl and the Birds of Prey movie, a little less vulgar, but sort of the same sort of vibe. A kind of a street level, this is real stuff and we're going to go out, but we're also going to, you know, have us a nice egg sandwich and mess around and do our thing over here. So I liked it. I don't love it, but you should read it.
I have not been reading anything going on with Batman for the last couple of years. So to say that you need to know what's going on in order to read this book, I don't agree, because I think that they spell out enough stuff about, oh, we had to move because of this. And then they reference these things throughout the story to kind of get you caught up. Now, why the three of them are a team, you know, that's still the big question mark. But that's just something that, hey, everybody, here's the team. They've been thrown together just like the real world. And they're going to go and live together in a loft in New York City. I'm sorry, Gotham City. And so, you know, if you can just hand wave that part of it about why are they a team together, then the rest of this, I think, makes a lot of sense. There's not a whole lot that you're going to be confused on. Even if the magistrate shows up, or even if it is after Fear State, which it is after Fear State, then, you know, I don't think that stuff really ultimately matters in this story. And I couldn't find if this was a limited series or an ongoing. It may be, hey, we're going to try this out for 6 issues and see how it goes. Right. And then if it's doing well, we'll continue it, kind of thing.
Everything that I've seen says part one of 6.
Yeah.
But doesn't commit to that 6 being the end. Also, looking at what I'm looking, this is the first appearance of the Saints in Prime Earth continuity.
Okay.
So this is the characters from Future State coming up in the regular, whatever that means, DC Universe. Also, yeah. Seer does not yet have an entry on any of the databases that I can find. So they are new enough that I can't look them up and have everybody say, oh, you're a genius who knows things about comics. So I'm very depressed about
that. Yeah. So I guess bottom line for me, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. I think that even though the cover says 13 plus, I really think that this is like 11 plus. I don't think that, I just don't see, I mean, yes, there's a lot of violence and kicking and that kind of stuff, but I don't know if that is the reason why you need to go a 13 plus rating on here. There's no nudity. There's no bad words. So I don't know why it would necessitate that, that warning, unless it's violence. But I mean,
I think it's the violence and the implication of zombies. I think,
I think they're just hypnotized, and zombies, even the zombies, I don't think are going to necessitate a 13 plus, but I don't know. I think, if you're trying to attract a YA audience, which is what this reads to me, slapping that 13 plus on there isn't going to help you. That being said, I don't know of any kid that has ever paid attention, or really any parent that pays attention to any kind of ESRB or parental adult grading system out there. So take that.
What if they're doing that to get the 8 and 9 year olds to buy it? Yes, like when we were 10 and 11, all the girls that we went to school with were like, I'm going to read 17. Why? So that I can be a teenager, because soon I'll be a teenager. You put that 13 on there, and the 9 year olds are going to be like, oh, I'm getting away with something. I'm going to go buy that Bat Girls comic. Yeah,
probably not. Otherwise, the warning label would have been way up top. Because totally. I don't know, dear listeners, and maybe people who are in the Dueling Review chat room who are listening live.
Yeah.
I don't know how your comic book store displays new comics, but most of the ones that I have frequented over the years do a tiered system where the comic on the very front is the newest issue, and then the one behind that is the previous week's issue, and so on and so forth, if they do it that way, or else if they just have one kind of a newspaper magazine rack kind of display, then you know, your front row might have your top row might have Batgirls, but then that's being covered over on the row in front of it by Superman, or the row in front of that by, you know, Captain America or whatever it may be. So seeing that ages 13 plus way down in the lower left-hand corner is probably going to not hit that marketing gimmick. So I don't know how people are displaying their comics in comic stores these days. Let's see. Jimbo Fett says, mine does tiers of the new releases on one side, then last week's on the other side of the tier. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Yep.
I haven't been in a comic store in so long. I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, so for me, this is enjoyable. It's a fun comic. I think that people should go out and pick it up. But now what we need to do is we need to wrap up the show, and we need to let everyone know that if you want to vote on next week's show, then you need to head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Do not wait. Get it done by the end of the day on Saturday so I can tabulate things up on Sunday. As I mentioned last week on the show, I have now broken any kind of reference to Previews World for any of their comic book stuff. Their tomfoolery and their shenanigans continue, and I'm not going to have any of it. So for now, while the Comixology website is up and still putting up what's coming out in the weeks ahead, then I'm just going to point you to that Comixology site. You can look and see what's coming out next week, the week of Christmas. And you can filter it by publisher if you have a favorite publisher. Realize that we don't do comic books that are trade collections. So somebody pointed out earlier in the pre-show chat that the Comixology next week is selling a comic that is $109.99. That's also an omnibus that is 600 plus pages. We're not going to be reviewing that. We're also not reviewing old stuff. And that is one of the things that is sometimes a little difficult when you're scanning through all those comics. You might see, oh, look, there's this Blood Syndicate issue 21 that's coming out next week. Well, that's also an old issue. That's a reprint, so to speak, that they're doing. And one thing that you can do is look at what's the cover price. If it's $1.99, it's probably something that came out years ago. If it's $2.99 or higher, or in the case of, I know a couple of people have already voted on this for next week, Batman One Dark Night number one, that's a $6.99 issue. Holy cow, $6.99.
You don't have to read that.
That's one of those black label books.
I don't
books,
have $7
right?
left in the budget, man.
But most of the books you're going to see and be able to tell right away, you know, whether it is a legit book or not. But we don't do trades, we don't do reprints. Obviously, on Comixology, they're not going to have like the second printing of, you know, a book there, because it's digital. It's always the first copy.
Doesn't happen like
So go over there to the Patreon site, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Look for the Dueling Review post for next week. Cast your vote, and then we will be back next week. Yes, we will have a show next week because I think it's the 23rd is Thursday. So we will be back live, and we're hoping that you connect your Patreon account to the Discord server so you can come and listen to us live. And until then, read some comics. Have some fun reading comics. And we'll be back next time.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.